Next case is 98-27-18, G. James Samaro, M.D. versus Anthem Insurance Company.
A lot of people interested in that.
Yeah.
Most all developers are.
Developers and... city attorneys from other small cities.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it's in the same situation.
Most of the developers and... contractors.
Is this a city? Do this.
Town property doesn't say that. He's willing to see the office, and we've done some.
I don't think the city's not willing to do it either.
Jesuit.
Well, why are they...
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, and please, the court.
Because of your improving street...
Rather than track our briefs, I think the briefs are very complete on both sides. I'd like to indicate that this case is really the hub or the linchpin of the crisis and chaos that's presently in managed healthcare. Because the linchpin to managed healthcare is the provider network, or the doctor. The doctors who I represent. It is undisputed that these doctors were terminated after 20 years with the predecessor insurance company, and some of them 25 years, for no cause. No cause whatsoever. It is undisputed that they are eminently qualified physicians, some of the best orthopedists in the city of Cincinnati. They have done many of the Cincinnati Reds, Cincinnati Bengals, and they are world famous and have been on various societies nationally in their field of orthopedics. There is no dispute but that we are here on a motion to dismiss 12B6, in which there has been no discovery, not one deposition taken, and the Court of Appeals went so far as to say that no cause of action has been stated. Plaintiffs had patients for up to 20 years, as I said, with this same contract. There is a sacred honor in this state and in every state, and that's the doctor-patient relationship, which has been impacted. And it's very curious, not to delay or get into the facts, there was a contract with the old not-for-profit community mutual insurance company known as Blue Cross Blue Shield, that said, paragraph 29, either party may terminate this agreement by giving 30 days written notice to the other party. Nowhere can we find any doctors ever terminated by Community Mutual under paragraph 29. On March 1st, these doctors got a letter on Community Mutual stationery. This time, Anthem had already been doing the negotiating and had made attempts, starting with the Attorney General, to make it from a not-for-profit to a for-profit. And for purposes of this case, it is agreed that Anthem represents all the parties rather than going through all the various GHA, which is the HMO. And the doctors received the letter. All the physicians received the letter on Community Mutual stationery, which they respected and knew, and had dealt with. And they said there will be no changes. In fact, they're going to add doctors. The letter is very clever. In the March 1 letter, it says we're going to add, it's going to be called a joint venture between us and the doctors, and we're going to add 100 and 200 primary physicians to the network. They enclose a question and answer to these doctors.
But Mr. Chesley, it sounds like the case, the doctor said, this seems only pertinent to the doctor's viewpoint that had they known this letter misled them. Had they not had that letter, they would have terminated first. They would have quit the Community Mutual.
How could they betray their patients?
Well, that's in the case, isn't it?
Your Honor.
They say it. Didn't they say it?
Your Honor, we never had a chance for us to say anything. We had some briefs on a motion to dismiss.
Did I read that? Where did I read it?
I believe that's a position taken by the defendants.
Okay.
But be that as it may, I'm trying to give a predicate as to what this is about. I wish the record was that complete, like maybe a deposition as to what was behind it all, who was in charge, and why they changed positions, because clearly, Justice, There is no cost to an insurance company to have a bigger provider network, because insurance companies, managed care companies, pay a percentage of treatment, take it or leave it, and then you can walk away if you don't like the payment. But there is no disadvantage. It's an effort of control, which I'll get into in a moment.
But is that unlawful? We may not like it. We may not think that sounds very, according to Hoyle, but what's unlawful? That's what I'm having a problem with.
What's unlawful is public policy, and the issue is whether or not, and I'll get into it, it's inherent in every contract, is an implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. Anthem inherited a contract that had a covenant of good faith and fair dealing from Blue Cross Blue Shield. Therefore, the same standard must apply. Now, when they answer a question as follows, and I'll move along, will the size of the community choice network be decreased? Answer, no. In fact, the GHA is the consultant, that's going to be the managed care partner, and the network management, our community management, mutual plans to add 100 to 200 new physicians, not primary care, to the community choice network. So this was a belief that there would be an inherent covenant of fair dealing. Now, let me go to what the Court of Appeals said.
Usually when we've enforced that, we've had some contract between an employee and an employer. This isn't an employee. Do you say this is an employee-employer?
No, I think more analogous to employee-employee is the hospital privileges. Privileges at a hospital have been upheld by this court numerous times that there must be due process before you terminate a doctor because of the sacred patient, the patient-physician relationship.
Is it based on that? Is it based on that, or is it actually based on the folks' right to earn the importance of earning a living? It's not special for doctors, is it?
I think it is special.
We've never held doctors sacred. Just the communications between the doc and the patient can't be.
A patient. It's more than communications that's sacred. I disagree with Justice. I think that the patient-doctor relationship. For example, if somebody who has cancer has had the same doctor for 3 years and all of a sudden told they can't go to that doctor anymore, it's more than the communications. Somebody has a psychiatrist that they've had for 3 years and all of a sudden they've been thrown out of the network for no cause, there is a relationship between that psychiatrist and that doctor that's much greater than just the communication skills.
If I'm employed by X company and I become employed by, and I have insurance, I like my doctor, really like my doctor, we've got a good relationship, and I go to Y company who does not have the plan that covers that doctor.
Trial court.
Am I entitled under current law to say to the new company that I have a relationship with my doctor, that you have to include my doctor in your plan?
No.
How is it?
No. You don't have a right to change. The problem is that your employer who picks. You're an employer. I don't want to get into an argument about the management healthcare by limited time. But the bottom line is it's the employer who picks your character. And that's who you get. And so many of these patients were these doctors' patients, and all of a sudden they no longer are their patients. Forget the issue of loss income.
Well, they're not no longer their patients. They're no longer, the doctor cannot get reimbursed by Anthem.
They are no longer their patients because about 85% of the public in the state of Ohio is unable to afford to go to their own doctor because they don't have the private resources. No, if they have the private resources, so we have a separate rule for wealthy people. And the issue is that 85% depend on some kind of benefit by insurance or public benefit.
Counsel?
Can I just get a glass of water?
Yes.
You made the comment that Davis, rather, I just spoke about the physician would have terminated first with the defendant's physician. Is that correct?
I'm sorry.
You made the comment in response to Justice Cook's question that the physician, would have terminated first was the defendant's physician. Correct?
Well, I believe what the point is.
Have you read your complaint that you're applying to trial?
I
read paragraph 96. This is your complaint. Had defendants revealed their true plans, physicians would have independently exercised their right, I'm assuming they mean their 30-day right, to terminate the agreement provide services, thereby leaving defendants without power in the market because they would have insufficient providers for ultimately pursuing regulatory or legal remedies. Meaning, you're telling me that you would have taken the right, 30-day right to terminate and done it first. That's what you say in paragraph 96.
I'm mistaken. I'm mistaken, Justice, in my response to Judge Cook. But let me...
What did you mean, or know, you didn't draft it, obviously, if somebody else is suing?
I can't blame anybody else. My name's on it, Judge. I have to take responsibility for it. It's drafted, I take responsibility for what's in the complaint. Although complaints do get amended from time to time.
Janet Adler is here.
Pardon? Yes, Janet is here, but I take responsibility. Justice, I take responsibility.
What do you mean by that, Eric?
What? These were desperate circumstances, and this was, at best, a chicanery that was going on because it was done under community mutual. And the defendant's position today will be, well, they weren't terminated by Anthem, they were terminated by community mutual because Anthem didn't actually take over until September. They were terminated in June. And their position is, oh, gee, they weren't terminated by Anthem, who they had a relationship with. They had no relationship, they were terminated under the guise of community mutual.
When you say that they didn't have to exercise their right to terminate the agreement, what right do they have to terminate?
Under the actual language of the agreement, there is no justice. Pardon? Absolutely. There is
no... You're lying to exercise it for Anthem or not?
I am suggesting that when put into a box, there was an unequal bargaining power. There was no equality of bargaining power. And therefore, they had absolutely no options but to take a look at whether they should make the first thrust and then still sue, because even had they terminated their contract under this, they still would have brought their complaint because it impacted their ability of their relationship with their patients and their ability to make a livelihood.
So when you get back to the contract terms, you're claiming that your clients had the right to exercise a 30-day at-will termination, but Anthem had no correspondence.
Just like any employee.
If that's what the court wishes to suggest, I will have to answer that the complaint speaks for itself. But that is 96.
Sort of.
That's paragraph 96 of about a 50-page complaint. And
it seems pretty important addition that you have a 30-day terminal at-will right.
Justice, if we take that to its logical position, that I have no business being here, and there is no such thing as public policy, and there's no such thing as contracts of good faith, and there is no such thing as public.
Because there are, you have to take into consideration all the other causes, and
exactly.
They were not being upfront, they didn't disclose the plans. And
thank you.
Well, these arguments of policy and pleading and all are interesting, but we ought to get right to the legal issue. The Court of Appeals says, the contracts between the parties were admittedly at will, and plaintiffs have not stated any claim that could render the at will termination clause unenforceable. In the trial court's opinion, I think it was Judge Crush, as I recall, says that Ohio has not accepted the concept of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. Now, if there were that covenant of good faith and fair dealing, then would the contract still have been terminable at will by the insurer?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. Let me go very quickly to what the Court of Appeals also said. Ohio does recognize that an implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing applies to some contracts,
yep,
such as those. Assuming that such a duty exists in this case, we still hold that plaintiffs have failed to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. I turn the Court's attention to Bowling versus Cleveback, which is an Erie County Court of Appeals decision, which makes it crystal clear that parties to an employment contract, as with any other contract, are bound toward one another by standards of good faith and fair dealing. And what the Court of Appeals did is said, well, there's more courts of appeals saying that we don't have good faith in Ohio than there are that we don't, but nobody can cite a Supreme Court case of Ohio. There are two issues, two prongs. Prong one would be a California approach, which is clearly that having to do with the good faith, and I believe, which Ohio has adopted. And there's also the public policy position. Let me give an example of 1753-09. 1753-09, which wasn't applicable at the time the case was cited, but shows where the legislature had gone. There are special rules for doctors that are terminated for cause. There's a due process here. So then what the legislature does is they came up with F, and they said, well, you know, that's well and good, but under F, nothing in this section prohibits a health insurance corporation from directing a provider's application for participation or for terminating a participating provider's contract. No due process. They passed the Patient Protection Act issue. The recently enacted Patient Protection Act, which is 1751 F. Sec., contains provisions regarding internal review and appeal rights for patients who have been denied coverage for specific treatments by their insurance companies. The law requires that the treating physician must submit written documentation supporting the necessity of the treatment. This means that the doctor who knows he can be terminated at will must become a patient advocate under the statutory scheme. Under 1753.01, the statute permits insurance companies to base termination decisions on economic profile, how much they'll charge. The combined effect of these two statutes is under these statutes, physicians are assumed to be patient advocates, yet they have no protection from termination if they recommend alternative treatment to their patients. This is the risk to doctors will have a chilling effect upon them, even recommending alternative treatment in the first place, because they know it can embroil them in battle with the insurance company.
Mr. Chesley,
yes.
I wonder about the proposition of law asks that we construe this contract to, I'm using public policy to find that it's, that it can't, I guess it can't be enforced as written. So, to me, the terms, you know, either party can quit in 30, with 30 days notice, maybe, do you think, is that subject to construction? I'm thinking more that the real request is to reform that contract and to delete that provision as against public policy.
I believe, I don't know if reforming is the right word, I believe that it should be held to be against public policy.
But you're speaking of the terms, your proposition law's terms?
Termination.
No, terms of the contract, the provisions of the contract, the terms of the contract are what, I mean, we have to start with that.
Well, you start with the fact that you cannot terminate, I mean, there are three cases that I would like to discuss. I'll take 1 second, maybe this will answer your question. If not, Justice, I will be more than happy to. I learned a long time ago, always answer a judge's question, and I'm sorry, but I think I've got to find a hold about 3 minutes for rebuttal. But let me give you two, there are two bookend cases in the Supreme Court of Ohio, and they're bookend with the middle. And the bookend showed a kinder, more gentler understanding of our problem. And it goes back all the way, it's not in our brief, 144 Ohio State 275. Person pulls their car into a parking lot, hands them the keys, and the ticket says, we are not responsible for any damages whatsoever. Ticket says it, the contract says it, the person took the ticket. And back in 1942, the Supreme Court said, wait a minute, that's against public policy. They turned their car over to them. A kinder, more general understanding. Then in the middle of my book ends is the Kulch case. And I believe that Kulch stands for some very remarkable structural fibers, decided, I guess, a year plus ago. And I'd like to just state, point two things.
Very, very quickly. Very quickly, you've used your time, so
I was trying to answer quick. Very quickly. Finally, the right of this court to recognize a common law cause of action and remedy for the wrongful discharge of an at-will employee cannot be seriously questioned. And even in the concurring opinion by Justice Piper, it says, I concur in the syllabus. I am pleased to see that a cause of action for whistleblowers has finally found its most fitting form, the common law. And let me give you the last of my bookends, and it'll take 1 second, and I won't. And that's the old Pittsburgh case. Pittsburgh Supreme Court, 1916. I haven't cited a case that long for a long time. But it says, courts should not hesitate to hold such contracts wholly null and void. This is McKinney, who worked for the Pullman Company, and they said that she has to release any and all future injuries. A fundamental principle of public policy upon which the Ohio Constitution and its laws are founded, as well as from the spirit of many of our constitutional principles, such as a policy as contained in the Pullman Company, and the case is clearly in conflict with the sound and humane policy of the state. So I cite those three cases, the two bookend cases. And in conclusion, our system, and in answer, I think back to you, Justice Cook.
Mr. Chesley, you've gone way over your time, please.
I apologize.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Maiman.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court. I'm Earl Maiman, along with my partner, Rob Johnson. I represent defendant appellees in this case, who, for purposes of this oral argument, I will refer to collectively as Amlin, unless the circumstances require otherwise. Your Honors, this is a case in which the doctors, the appellants, are asking the Court to expose Amlin to liability for having exercised a right that was expressly reserved to both parties in their contract, and which was not in any way prohibited by any statute in this state, was not prohibited in any way by any rule or regulation of the Department of Insurance in this case, in the state, and was not prohibited in any way by any other contract that either of the parties had with anybody else. There is no prohibition against Anthem having done precisely what it did in any aspect of the law in the state. Now, according to the doctors, they entered into this contract more than two decades ago, and they apparently enjoyed the benefits of this contract for a very long time. Now they are complaining because Anthem eventually exercised its right of termination, that they are very clear in saying that they themselves would have exercised had they deemed it appropriate.
Counsel, rare for me, but I'm interested in the procedural aspect of this one. I understand where two sides are. Apparently, if there's no public policy exception to this,
the
exercise of the disposition of the contract, you should win, period. Correct. If there's to be a public policy exception, how should that be fleshed out? And my question is, Mr. Chesley's argument that there should be some public policy exception, presumably crafted out of the facts of this case, but having a broader application than just this insurance company leased out to. Is there enough here to make that judgment report? And if there isn't, how much further along should a case progress before it's closed down for reviewing courts to make that call as to whether or not there should be a public policy exception? In other words, you need to go through a full-blown trial or not here just from pleadings to make that ultimate call?
Well, apparently there's enough on the pleadings for this court to make that call. This is not a situation where you're going to turn this question over to a jury to make a determination as to what is the public policy in the state of Ohio. And throughout the course of these deal proceedings, the plaintiffs have never once articulated what it is they even envision arising out of this case, other than their clients, I suppose, collecting damages of some sort. When you think about it in terms of the ramifications that were, I think, very eloquently articulated by Judge Crotch down below, he was talking about the enormous range of interactions that have to be taken into account when you think about this. And if you just think for a minute, one of the questions was what happens when an employee leaves his employment and goes to another employer, and the employer has a different insurer or the same insurer with a different panel. Has his constitutional right or has there been some kind of public policy violation in that instance? What happens if an employer simply wants to change his insurance company at the end of a year? If he does, which many insurance employers do on an annual basis, then he gets a new insurance company, and that insurance company has a new panel, then you're going to have some employees who are going to have to see new doctors. Is that a violation of public policy? What if an employer wants to stay with the same insurer but change panels, because really the cost of insurance varies based upon the size of the panel? So if an employer has to reduce the amount of insurance he can provide against a narrower panel, has he then violated public policy? What happens when the doctors themselves want to withdraw from these networks due to whatever reasons? They may not like the reimbursement rates, they may not like the policies and procedures of the managed care company. The irony today is that between the time this lawsuit was filed and now, you see more doctor groups sort of pulling out of these panels than you see the vice versa. There is no discussion anywhere in the plaintiff's or the appellant's analysis as to how all of these innumerable interactions and circumstances are to be addressed. And so my view is that the court has got to conclude that there is no public policy exception here. And of course, the particular issue...
But in arriving at that conclusion, you would have us do it on the bare bones allegations of the complaint without the case being fleshed out any more than that from a factual standpoint on either side.
Well, the bare bones allegations of the complaint, Your Honor, are that there is a contract between these parties that is very plain, very clear, very unambiguous, that says either party can terminate on 30 days' written notice. And you have the plaintiffs in that very same complaint incredibly saying, in plain, unambiguous language, that had the circumstances, if they deemed the circumstances appropriate, they themselves would have withdrawn.
Counsel, is it against public policy to allow an insurance company to determine whether or not a procedure that the doctor wants to perform is necessary?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I have a feeling I may be coming up here on that question in the future, Your Honor. I am not really in a position to address that subject today because I don't think it's... I'll give you main and
was that answer. Was that becoming a problem with this group of doctors?
Pardon me?
Was that becoming a problem with this group of doctors?
According to the complaint, Your Honor, if you look at paragraph 57 of the complaint, it states that Anthem's motive for terminating this group without cause was because it wanted to streamline its administrative costs, save money, and make more profit.
Did you admit that paragraph of the complaint?
No, I don't believe that I did.
Well,
I'm going to accept it for purposes of the Rule 12b-6 motion, because that's
okay.
My application.
Because I recognize your position on that it's cancelable at will without cause and without any reason given. But what was the reason they canceled them?
Well, we're stuck with the complaint, Your Honor. And, I mean, the complaint says that it was done to save money and increase profits. And for purposes of a 12b-6 motion, it's my obligation to accept that.
So you're willing to accept that you terminated these doctors because, in effect, they wanted to provide more treatment than the insurer was willing to give?
No, that's not what paragraph
57. Well, isn't it fairly construed, paragraph 57? Right. Couldn't paragraph 57 be fairly construed to say that?
Paragraph 57 talks about streamlining administrative expense.
Yeah, that's denying any additional tests.
I don't think that's the same thing, Your Honor. I don't think it's fair construction. But even if you want to take that as your construction, the question still remains that there's a contract out there. And maybe that brings you back, and maybe that was the point that Mr. Sweeney was going at. If it was, I apologize if I thought it was off. If I wasn't copying it correctly. But I'm willing, for purposes of a 12b-6 motion, we take the complaint based upon what it says. It says that the termination was to save administrative costs and increase profit. Fine.
Yes. I guess maybe it's not in this. I thought I read someplace here that the smaller the panel of doctors, the more efficient or the higher profit is for the insurance company. Is that I guess that statement could be interpreted. Is that reason too?
I don't think that's in the record, Your Honor. I don't think it's in the complaint. Except to the extent what the plaintiffs were alleging is that if you have a smaller panel, you can have them reduce costs, reduce their expense because they're going to attract more patients.
I guess I thought that was, maybe I'm using something else. I thought that was one of the reasons for HMOs, was that you have a discrete panel and that makes it more efficient, the insurance part of it to be more efficient, but that's...
Well, it helps. It helps reduce, it helps keep the cost of the doctor's cost under control because they're getting more patients and they reduce their costs. Now, I mean, I think it is important, too, to recognize in this case that this is not a case about patient rights. In other words, plaintiffs, in this case, do not have the right to stand in the shoes of patients. There are no patients who are parties to this case. The plaintiffs cannot come in here saying that they're here to vindicate some right of some alleged harm from some unnamed patient. They've got to come in here to address their own rights. And that's not really what they're doing at all. As a matter of fact, what they're trying to do is cloak their own economic interests in this veil of patient rights. And they talk to you about the ideal doctor-patient relationship and give you this article from JAMA. But under Ohio law, the truth is that a doctor has the right himself to terminate his relationship with his patient for any reason whatsoever, just as long as he gives the patient an opportunity to find a new doctor and get medical care. Now, moreover, I think it is also very critical to note that on a going forward basis, Chapter 175309 really is going to govern this situation anyway. In some respects, our debate here is academic, because Chapter 175309 talks about the circumstances under which doctors can be terminated for cause from a panel, and also clearly states that terminations without cause are allowed. So you have the legislature, to the extent that there's some talk about public policy, even after this event, the legislature still holds
that. I'm fascinated on all the events, only in this case, to the extent that we were looking at public policy exceptions, I suppose we need to be looking forward to see whether it isn't going to have much application in the future. But if terminations without cause are allowed, why would we ever terminate for cause?
Well, because, you mean why would an insurance company terminate for cause?
Yeah.
Because it has an obligation to do that. If it has a doctor for
why not just terminate? Without cause, if that's allowed under the statute, I can't.
You mean to save the trouble?
Why write a lawsuit?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that they've cited this New Jersey case in which a doctor, this is New Jersey Psychological, and there the plaintiff was arguing that he had been terminated for cause, but the insurer had used its without cause provision in order to circumvent that, and the court said you can't do that. And I think that that's accurate. I mean, if the termination is for cause, it's for cause, and it's incumbent upon the insurance company to terminate for cause, because then the report's got to go to the National Practitioners Data Bank. They have to be advised that there was an issue, if you will, with this particular position. And so it's incumbent upon the insurer to do it. Another point that was raised and discussed during the appellate's argument was the issue of good faith. And the law in Ohio, as we have stated in our brief, is that there is no such thing as good faith when you're talking about or dealing with an at-will contract. It's an inherent contradiction in terms. Talk about doing something in good faith when you can perform that act for a good reason, a bad reason, or no reason at all. How do you evaluate good faith when you've done something for a bad reason that you're allowed to use? You want to use some other group because your brother-in-law is the president of the group. That might be considered bad faith, but when you have that, well, it encompasses those kinds of circumstances. And that's what the case is said. And by analogy, as noted in our brief, the UCC, which talks about good faith in commercial transactions, also notes that where you have a specific provision that allows a party to contract to act in a particular way, can't say that they acted in bad faith by employing or using that particular provision when they did. That's exactly the circumstance that we have right now. On balance, then, and on whole, there is no public policy that prevented him from doing what it did back in 1995. And for that reason, respectfully request that the court confirm the judgment.
Chesley, you've used your time, which may take 30 seconds.
Well, I know, it's just Stratton and Janet Everett. I think her answer is better relative to paragraph 92. If the doctors knew of the change in their relationship, they would have had cause to terminate the contract. In other words, they would not be acting arbitrarily and capriciously. Termination of doctors chose to terminate. Also, I think the Bolden case I cited is good law in Ohio. And the last thing I want to say is take a look at Pittsburgh Supreme Court of Ohio. I never quoted Abraham Lincoln from this court or any other court, but I have to. Abraham Lincoln, in his great message to the federal Congress, delivered his life.
And what will your white light on? You want us to find public policy to reach this termination of will out of the country? Is there an underpinning that we can look to? Maybe that was your opening sanctity of the doctor-patient relationship. I guess I'm not, for example, the case of the woman who the veterinarian was investigating was inappropriate behavior with an employee, but he had less than the statutory number of employees to get him into the statutory protection. This court, I think, unanimously found that there's a public policy expressed by the legislature that ought to be applied to all employers, regardless of how small. So it was something for us to focus on, to pin that public policy on it, and to then move forward with the common law to flesh out the claims.
Let me give you two.
And I'm looking for, what's the underpinning here for the
one would be physician-patient relationship, and going to the group of cases, I think Harper's one of them, group of cases relative to the privileges doctors have the doctors have with hospitals before you can discharge it. Your point is well taken. There's no reason for them to look for cause. To use the excuse of F in 1753-09 is very disturbing, because that whole question has to be taken a look at. And the other underpinning is, can you have a statute that's going to say, if you want to get rid of somebody, notwithstanding anything else, you can just get rid of them. And the other underpinning would be the employment cases, the culture and so forth, because this is a sort of employee kind of analogy. And the third underpinning is the insurance case. This is an insurance company, and insurance policies are always interpreted in favor of the insurer, and in a way they are sort of the insurer, and at least through the patient. So those would be three possible underpinnings, and I won't bother the court with A-blank. Thank you.
Thank you. Chesley, the case is submitted. You'll be advisor of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open court, the Supreme Court of Ohio, now stands adjourned. Thank you.